write about, trying to figure out what it's all about. Existentialist, am I worth anything or just a scout? I don't know, I don't know.
That was Great Sounds of Watts Without Side on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven.
Myself, Preston, with my partner in crime, Long Island raised, Elm City made, EZ Blues. Easy. You are better with introductions more than me. Who do we have with us today again on the show?
Ladies and gentlemen, let's jump in the DeLorean. Go into the Wayback Machine, okay? Let's take it to 88 miles an hour and jump back into the future. See, a while ago, this incredible human being walked into Horizon Studios and was like, I have a project that needs to get done. And from behind the board, Uncle Vic said, okay, sure, sounds good. From that, the project started to build and build and build. Over, I think, 30-something songs were up for this particular project. And from there, whittled down the amount that you're going to get for an entire record. And just the way this person has grown and has been so openly vulnerable has been really inspiring. So I want you to put your hands together, not if you're driving. If you're driving, please keep your hands at 10 and 2 because we don't need any accidents. But mentally, put your hands together for the fantastic, the amazing, the absolutely sensational Miss Jennifer Hill.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thank you for being here. I just, you know, it's always great to have you on and to sit and talk music with you. But honestly, like, this is a celebratorial aspect of it because you have a record finished.
Yes, I do. I have a record finished, although it's not, out yet as the full record.
Right.
Because, you know, we have to kind of save those songs as little precious babies to put out there every once in a while. You know, to keep momentum going, but it's the album is a full story, so it's, you know, my life in a span of 20 years.
Right. So this is from the age of 2 till now, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
But no, this is what's so incredible is when you have a piece like this that can go over your entire life aspect of it. I mean, we're starting to see that a lot more now that people are really enjoying the second chapters in life. And there's a lot more, it's a lot, I won't say easier, but it's a lot more understanding to release it on your own. You don't necessarily need all of that, the label and stuff behind you. So you have more time to really sit there and pick the songs that you want to pick for there. What was the hardest part of recording this particular record, other than living through 20 years?
Well, I think really there weren't too many hurdles except for that I started this album while everybody was still hibernating from COVID.
Right.
So there were weeks in between where we couldn't get together because somebody that we decided to work with got COVID, and then we have to wait 2 weeks. And we had a lot of that going on, which I think probably added like another 8 months to the project. Mm-hmm. But I mean, at the same time, I felt like it was a good time because it was kind of quiet. Like, it was kind of quiet in the studio. You know, things are getting busier now, but I had more time to, you know, pick through to come in and work on my stuff, where I think that if it wasn't still everybody being, you know, we're still dealing with COVID, but right. I started this 2 years ago and everybody was still like, masks were in heavy rotation. Like, so, you know, I think that that led to it taking a bit more time. And I think that's really it. Mm-hmm. And then, just like I said, the same thing with having people's schedules work out because, you know, something happened, even in their own bands. Like, they're, oh, we went and we went somewhere and we were exposed to COVID. And it's like, oh, okay, I'll see you in a month.
Well, no, and what's really interesting is you have some incredible, like incredible musicians on there. You have the absolutely amazing Stout doing some backup and different aspects there. What is it like to go through the Rolodex? And obviously you are someone who has consistently put for that CT is about a scene and about a strong female scene. What is it like to have that and be able to do that on a record?
Well, I mean, for me, my biggest, what I was really excited to do was work with my friend June Millington. That for me was like, we've been talking for years about doing songs together. I've come up with different ideas, you know, like maybe we should do this, maybe we should do that. You know, she showed me her one of her projects she was working on during COVID, and when I went to the studio and heard what she did on her own, like, you know, her own full album, it was like there was so much grit to it and so much that was similar to like what I think about things. And her being a woman that came through during the 60s and the 70s and had to fight and fight and fight and fight. It's really cool that we came together the way we did, because originally we were gonna do a Bonnie Raitt cover and put it on this album.
Oh, wow.
And we had a song we were gonna do, and she's friends with Bonnie Raitt. So I was like, okay, if I'm gonna do a Bonnie Raitt song, I really have to kill this song because it will be heard. I am more than likely it will get sent over. So I was, you know, I was thinking of what song I wanted to do, and I had a particular song in mind that kind of said all the things I wanted to say. But, ooh, I almost fell off my own chair.
No falling, no falling, no falling.
So then I don't know, I revisited this song that I wrote, oh God. Harlow's 13. So I wrote the song about 11 years ago, and it had this like feeling to it that reminded me of one of the songs that she just had done on her album. And I'm like, okay, this song kind of mimics like a little bit of like what she was doing before. Let's see if she's interested in this song. So I was like, listen, instead of us doing Bonnie Raitt, maybe you'll like this song of mine. And I sent it over to her, and she was like, yeah. this is everything. I was like, I want you to be dirty on it. I want slide. I want, you know, that grit, that power. Because the song, you know, is about a whole bunch of different things. And it's the first one that's released, so you can hear it now, Gemma Star. It's on all streaming services. But it was a whole bunch of different parts of my life that made that song. So it was weird because so I wrote it while I was watching Sons of Anarchy.
Nice. Nice. I've had those moments. I've literally had the same exact moment. But go
Yeah,
ahead.
like I was so into the character of Gemma, and I really wanted her to have redeeming qualities, like so badly. I
Yep.
don't know
I
why.
got you. Because this is a no matter what, and obviously she becomes the foil in there, but she's also a very strong, independent woman who, you know, took charge of a lot of her life and had to lead a family. So I can understand why we're automatically going to look for the redeeming qualities. And that's what's so incredible about them retelling of the Macbeth story. Not Macbeth. What was the what was it? Hamlet. The Hamlet story. Thank you. Oh boy, it's been a day. It's been a day. Hold on, spinach. All
Was
right,
like, wait,
so
you really have a can of spinach like Popeye?
yes, like okay. So telling of the Hamlet story is you needed to feel how painful it was going to be, you know, throughout each and every aspect of it. Like I still remember to this day when Opie walked in there and be like, "I got this one." You know, I can watch that to this day and be like, "No,
Yeah.
my dude," you know, and still get choked up about it. So I totally understand. And like for the longest time, it was my goal to write a song that you could look at as the end credit of a Sons of Anarchy
Yeah.
show. you know, that became the goal. Like this song will be at the end credits of a Sons of Anarchy show. And yes. I'm still thinking that because, you know, still you could remake the show. You know, that's fine. Just start the whole show over again just so one of my songs can be on there. It'd be fine.
Well, it's evolved though, because strangely in this process, as I've been working on the song, one of my very good friends is known as the meth songstress on the Mayan. Mm-hmm. So as I'm recording this song, she's sending me pictures like, this is me on set. I'm the meth songstress. She's in episode 6 and mm-hmm. she's sitting there strumming and someone says like, this place is really weird. And I'm like, yes, it's very strange for me too, because somehow my life keeps colliding with this weird thing. And now a very good friend of mine is the meth songstress. Okay. So yeah, I mean, so it was basically, you know, like you said, the woman that was like, she went through so much shit. She was strong the whole time. And but at night when nobody could see it, that's when she fell apart, you know?
Right.
So that's pretty much the song. It says it goes from being really hard with this really stomping groove to, and in the night when everyone's asleep, I can feel this way. And in the night when everyone's at peace, I can go insane because I can't let that happen in front of everybody else.
Mm. Exactly.
So that song was like this powerful ballad of this woman that says, you know, she's an old woman with a road on her face. Come to run this town, come to run your race. Confronted with pain, she'll kick you down just to be the one standing on this ground. Like, that is her, like, that's what she's saying.
Right.
So now I'm writing this. This is some other weird stuff about me. And so I grew up in the motorcycle culture. My mom and dad both rode motorcycles. My brother he went to the American Motorcycle Academy. He was doing those souped up bikes like Jesse James.
Nice.
He still does some of that stuff on the side. He's now a firefighter. Mm. So when I was younger and I moved to southwestern Colorado, there was this huge biker rally once a year. And the thing about going to college there was it was sort of a status thing if you could get yourself on the back of a Harley and be in the parade.
Right.
So of course you're only like 19 years old, not thinking about these are men in gangs that are from different towns and you don't know the way everything works. And I ended up in a bar and called the Sidekick, which is still there to this day, has a woman sidekicking. It's like the only sort of rabble bar in Ignacio, Colorado, which is on the Navajo reservation. And just like in Sons of Anarchy, everyone's dancing and they're dancing like this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I'm like, oh, that's like how my grandpa dances. Like I could totally dance with anybody. So I'm like dancing with one guy with one, you know, thing on his back. Then I go to the bathroom, I come out, some other guy asks me to dance. I'm like, this is fun. These guys are older, you know, right. I'm just having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Until I ended up dancing with one from the El Banditos.
Oh boy.
Now, I have not known anything about them until now. I've been older and watched actually documentaries on them on television. And it was an interesting situation where I was told I was not leaving the bar. Mm. I was getting on the back of the bike and I was now going with the El Bandito. Oh,
okay.
All I did was dance with someone, but apparently I had broken a lot of rules.
Oh boy.
Oh wow.
So I had 3 guy friends with me that looked like they were going to poop their pants.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at them like, are you going to come get me? Like, is someone going to get me? Because I don't understand what's about to happen to me right now. And I remember the man was very handsome. He had a long, long braid all the way down his back. And I am not the type of girl to do anything like this because I'm very, very strong. But it was, they basically came up with, I had to kiss the ring in order to get the hell out.
Right. Wow.
So I came in, I kissed the ring, I said a sorry to everybody for dancing with too many people of different, gangs, because I didn't really understand. I thought it was just like a fun thing. And I literally on the way home probably yelled at my guy friends for like a whole 35 minutes. Like, are you serious? Did you see what was about to happen? Like, this was insanity. So I've been very close to that life before, in different aspects. So for me, that's why I think I wanted so badly for things to end up well in that show. But then it also brought this imagery to my mind of me in the Southwest. So even though I didn't watch Sons of Anarchy until like 12 years after I have moved from the Southwest, the first thing I could see was the river's high and the valley's low under the stars. Like it's like the whole thing about living there. And I had a job as a flower delivery person for 2 days. For 2 days.
2 days.
Yeah. But back then we didn't have a cell phone. And I'm getting these directions that say, drive out to County Road 202, and when you get to the mile marker, you'll see a dog that's tied to a sign, and you take a right there, and then at the second house on the left, there's a woman that sits outside. Go talk to her. Like, it was insanity, the things they tried to give me for directions to find flowers, like to deliver. So I just decided to just start dropping them off at random places because I didn't know where I was. So I got bad and I got in trouble. I tried to do the best that I could, but I just couldn't figure out these county roads and these dirt roads. So in the song, it says, there's a dirt-drenched sign with a ragged dog out to steal your life, because I literally had to run from those dogs when I was trying to drop off the flowers. So that song is like very strange to me because it's a culmination of 30 years of my life in one song. So it's like from me being 18 years old, well, not 30 years of my life, I'm being myself. But all the way through having a kid by myself, having to be that strong woman and stand up for myself, starting my own business because I didn't want to put her into daycare and I wanted to be able to use my house as my business, which is now 22 years in. So that song is kind of like for me, like a win. Like it's like this weird marathon. So I wanted to put it out first.
Nice.
And then what I did was last summer I went to where I used to live in Colorado and I took the train for the first time ever. The train is expensive. It's like
Yes, it is.
$300, to get on it. But I worked at the bagel shop before the train for many years. So I would kind of get annoyed with the train customers because they were always from out of state and they were loud and stuff like that. So when you lived there, you just never took the train because it was a tourist thing. You were like, eh, I'm not going to do that. Plus, they hadn't changed things with the coal, which I've done now. So a lot of us were kind of upset of it. Things were burning. So anyway, I finally went on the train. One of my friends hooked me up and I got on the train and it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. And while I was there, I snuck out into between the cars and I recorded the sound of the train on the tracks. Like, yep. And I got in trouble. Someone was like, "What are you doing between the tracks?" I'm like, taping the sound. So in the beginning of the song, that's why it starts with a train. It's me. It's me getting there. I'm getting to that space. And then June comes in with a howl. And
Howl.
June is like, she's known as the godmother of guitar. First all-female band signed to the majors, dealt with being taken all over the world, so much smoke put in places where things were expected to happen. And now it's like all these years later that she's fighting through and everyone's seeing her. And it's hard to be a person in this industry for as many years as I've been in, and the different ups and downs I've had, and not give up.
Right.
And meeting her was like, she was like, you don't even understand. There's, I didn't even want to talk about music. And I'm like, you didn't want to
right.
talk about music? You know, but she did the same thing I did. She went and taught women, and she has IMA, the Institute of Musical Arts, which is for women and people who identify
right.
as women to go there and have a safe space where you learn everything from your drums to your engineering to how to, you know, run the boards, everything. I'm sending my daughter
right.
actually this summer.
Nice.
Yeah. But so, and that's what I do. Like, you're right now
right.
behind me is my studio. This is where I teach.
Okay.
And I teach the youth, you know, for 22 years of tomorrow, which is mostly, I say I'm teaching 80% of girls how
right.
to stand up for themselves in this industry and how to navigate it. And June was doing the same thing. So it's so crazy how we met each other at the time that we did. And
it's the time for me to say WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven, myself, Preston, and EZ Blues. Jennifer Hill is with us on the show. Jennifer, go ahead and continue. I hope I didn't lose your train of thought.
No, you're good. Thank you. But I mean, it was just a really awesome experience. And one thing that you need to know, not everybody knows this. So it's called the Magical Queendom when you go to June's place. And it's magical. And time goes away.
Right.
So I get there about 1:30 in the afternoon, and there are people in the house that still haven't quite woken up yet that are rock stars in their own right. Like, I never know who I'm talking to half the time. And then I realize who I'm talking to, and I'm like, oh, hope I just didn't say something weird. But it went from us doing the tracks, and we sat there. I sat out down on the ground, and you'll be able to see some of these this footage later on. I'm sitting down on the ground behind her, and I'm kind of like her guitar person because we're going between her different guitars. She made sure to put the Les Paul on it, which is like her $450,000 Les Paul. We actually have a video where she accidentally hits it on the side. And she goes, oh no, I'm going to break my Les Paul doing a track for Jennifer. And it's the, the best moment, like, for me, but also we were both like, ah. So we did that. And then we got done, and we got like a message from Anne. Anne is June's partner. And she's like, dinner's ready. And we go inside, and we all sit around the table, and we're all strong females in art and music. And talk and talk and talk until I'm like, okay, it's 1:30 in the morning and I have to drive. Oh no, there's an extra bedroom if you want to stay. And I'm like, no, I have to go home.
yeah, if I don't go home now, I'm never leaving. This is utopia for me. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah, no, I fully understand, although only partially stand because I'm a dude, but you know, I can only imagine also, because as you and I have talked a million and a half times, this is a disgusting, dirty, horrible, evil, evil, evil industry, and there's a downside, you know, because it's just it starts to beat upon you so much, and it beats upon me being someone who is white and male, you know, there. I can only imagine the further you get away from being white and male, how harder and harder, and how much I've seen, you know, this industry, you know, break people. I also think it's absolutely like hysterical or whatever. We, you know, the serendipitousness between you and I is just incredible, because I too was raised through the biker culture. I have a bunch of uncles named Spider, you know, and I've seen some things that I probably shouldn't have seen at a young age. But it's okay. So it's like super interesting to see that that's also ties into it. Now, it seems like you're there and now releasing this song, you're at the cusp of this is the end of that particular part of your story.
Yeah.
Now, and I know we just finished this record, and but you're a creative like I'm a creative. What is the next story like?
Well, I mean, there's so many stories in this album that it's just like which one you pick to pay attention to because they're all telling you something. As a female, there are things that I believe that we need to talk about so that other people aren't stigmatized. I have a song on there called Erased, and Erased is when I dealt with a pregnancy with someone that I was not interested in being with at all. And I had a very young daughter at the time. And it was a very weird situation that I got myself into. And so I felt like because of how religious this person was and their family was, I wasn't allowed to use birth control. I don't even know why I got myself into this situation, but it was after a bunch of crap. And but then so it's my fault then if I end up with child after I'm told not I'm not allowed to use anything. So I think out of this person's own problem with things, they drove me to Planned Parenthood and just dropped me off there. And it was almost like a drive-through for that person. And I felt like all they wanted to do was erase me and anything that I ever did, so that they could have their own moral high ground. So that's what Erased is about. And that story didn't end up being a very good story because I unfortunately ended up dealing with the people who are against the anti-abortion activists. And one had somehow infiltrated the building and was my counselor.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Talked me out of the pain medicine
Oh my goodness gracious.
because I was the first person of the day. So I was screaming so loudly that literally people came in to the room busting in, like, what is happening to this woman? And nobody could identify the person, the counselor that had sat there and talked with me and talked me out of the pain medicine and talked me out of basically doing this procedure with nothing. I don't know how I made it through, but I did. And then 2 days later, I ended up septic, and I was pretty lucky that my ex was a stalker
Oh,
because
my.
he showed up at my doorstep and said, "Your eyes are completely black. What happened to you?" And I confess because I didn't want anyone to know because you know the stuff that we go through as females. So if he didn't stalk me and show up at my door, I probably wouldn't be talking to you right now because I had to have immediate surgery. So that whole situation and then dealing with the guy that just dropped me off, like I've never heard from him ever again. Like it seems like his even when social media started, like he made sure that I will never find him ever again, which is fine. But I think a lot of women that go through this feel the same way. It's like you were erased and shamed, and then I almost died because of the shame. And now we're dealing with, well, it's okay. We'll bring you to the brink of death before we help you because we have this new law in place. And it's making things even worse. So I felt like I had to put that song out now. I had to show, tell that story and I had to put it out so that other people could hear it. And, it says, all I got was erased. All you wanted to do was erase me and just move on with your life. And now I get to deal with all the rest of that comes from it. That's a heavy one.
That is a heavy one. I also wanted just to give a reminder that we are on terrestrial radio. So shoots.
I don't know what I did by accident,
Oh
but I
my
was too fast.
gosh.
It's all right. No, I know you first of all, before we go any further, I just want to say thank you for being as
Definitely.
open as you're being with us and for sharing as much of your story with us. I feel honestly blessed to sit here and walk through this with you. And we are here for you to walk through, walk as far as you want. We've got your back, totally.
Course.
So wanted to thank you for that. Also want to jump back into the DeLorean, go back there and talk to a whole bunch of people in a very stern way. You know, but that's just me. That's the Papa Bear in me that, you know, it's just like, no friend, you know, so it's okay. But yeah. It's so super interesting and so super important too, because you being so open and to tell this story, it's going to allow more people to be open and tell the story as well. And it's going to allow more people to understand that one, you know, that procedure that some people say are being used as birth control is not an easy procedure. It is not something that you can shake off after going to once. It's something that sits with you forever and ever and ever. So poo-poo on them. But also, you know, the fact that we have these, and I just say it the way that I want to say it, because, you know, we have these domestic terrorists that are out there that try to infiltrate these incredible places of business and health and, you know, try to get their way through. And that's not good. That's choosing intimidation, and boo, boo on them. Boo, boo, boo. But yay on the fact of, you know, being able to take some of these stories and spin them into an artistic way to help you deal with it and to help others deal with it. And I just, again, want to congratulate you for being so open to share these stories. So thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, as we continue with the record and the breakdown of it and everything, is there a song that jumps out there that is like the song for you, or are they all the song for you?
Gosh, so many of them are the song for me, but there's a song, like, I mean, Gemma Star means a lot to me, but I do think, like, Can't Say is another one that I wrote it so long ago, and I had these ideas in my head of what it could be. I played it many times, but in different ways. And this, I think it finally found where it was supposed to be. I think it's finally sitting in the pocket of where it needs to be. And it's more of a Take Back Your Power song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I used to play this song a lot because, like I said, I wrote it a long time ago. So it's probably like 18 years old, this song.
Right.
And, I would play it, and all of a sudden I would watch the door of the club open and slam. Mm-hmm. And I would know that was my significant other taking mm-hmm. off, because I was going through a bad relationship, and I wrote songs about it.
Right.
Kind of like Stevie Nicks, I'm going to sing it to you if you're going to do it to me.
Right.
So that song was like that. And now there's this crazy sax solo that Bill Holloman did.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That is like this gut wrenching, like, I just can't even explain it. That solo, along with Did You Think It Would Just Up and Change? Would I Still Be Here Crying in Pain? Would the light turn bright into a flame, or will it blow up in my face? That whole thing right there, like, I always knew I wanted it to have punctuation and how I wanted it, but, like, it's definitely one of my favorite moments of music on the album.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I think we've both agreed, Vic and I, that we think that it is the single of the album.
Okay.
But I just didn't want to put it out yet because I just didn't want to, like, let it go.
Right. Well, and sometimes that actually works too, because I know, like, talking with Vic, when you find that the single of the album, he almost wants you to release that on the day of the album release.
Yeah.
Because the two be married together, and I think that's such a fantastic idea, and it is very old school in the process of the recording industry and where releases used to be, and even to the fact where releases are today, and there are certain type of distribution deals that you can work out where you can drop a whole thing, but you can also drop it, you know, you can stagger the release, which is really, 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 really important, You know, this way you're getting the full marketing aspect out of it. And there's a lot, you know, we're just talking about the creative aspect behind here. I mean, we could have a whole nother show on how to market and what not to do for the market and who to believe for the market. And and that's a whole nother cavalcade of carnival nonsense and shaking hands and making sure you have the vaccine for your hands later, because, you know, it gets crazy. But it's so important because we need to get these messages out.
Or as a woman, for your face and for different parts of you that people just think they can touch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I both love and hate our industry. Like, you know, it's, if it wasn't so much of who I was to be a musician, I don't think I would ever be by this industry at all. But it is literally the scene from Godfather 2, I think. Every time I was out, they pulled me back in. You know, I have quit and retired from music 972 times. I'm still making music, you know?
Yeah, well, you just reminded me of something. Like, there was this time where I was thinking, I was really low, and I was just like, what the heck am I doing? I've been doing this for so long. I have a degree in it, and I'm still paying that off, because that's a whole nother story. I believe that anybody in the arts and in music, that if you're talented enough to make it through the audition, that you shouldn't have to pay tuition, because when you get out, there's nobody to help you with anything. And your tuition is higher than anyone else's because you're doing a fine art.
Yep.
So I just don't understand that, but that is a whole nother thing for me. And I try to teach my students and their parents about that. Not just trying to go towards big names and actually going where something's going to happen and you're not going to be stuck with $400,000 worth of debt later. But that's a whole other story.
Big facts. That's what we call big facts. Big facts being told today on the show.
But so I was really thinking that I was just like, what am I doing? And I went to Boston Calling. So I'm looking up on the stage, and St. Vincent's on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I look behind and I see my friend Daniel Menceris, who produced my first album, my first EP, Little Girl, which was one of the best experiences that I had before I got to working with Vic. So pretty much I had like almost a 20-year gap of liking the experience of one place and then finding another place where I like the experience as well. That's a big gap. So I am just like, oh my God, is that Daniel? Now, I knew that Daniel had something to do with St. Vincent and the production of the whole thing that was going on with St. Vincent, because he's kind of king of Ableton and he was really getting a name for himself.
Mm-hmm.
I met him when he was Marianne Faithfull's keyboardist. And unfortunately, she had gotten breast cancer, and that's how we were able to work together. He's like, I'm not going to be on tour. I actually can slide you in. So now, flash forward, this is like 15 years later, I'm looking at him on stage with St. Vincent, and I'm watching some girl in the front kind of pretend to play the keyboard, and I know it's not her. I know it's him. So I write to him onto his phone, not expecting to hear anything back, and I'm like, is that you that I just saw on stage behind St. Vincent, and are you really playing the keyboard and not this person? And he's like, oh my gosh, Jen, yes, it is me, and I can't say anything about what's happening on stage. I'm like, yeah, I know.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yes, but here I am telling myself I don't want to do this anymore, sitting in a crowd, and the one person who I still to this day love the EP he did for me and the people he put on it. I mean, I've got amazing people on that album as well. Mm-hmm. This is the second time now that I've had this help. So I'm like thinking, why would I have seen him, like, basically my angel of music, showing up on stage with his, he has an afro. So with his afro, which I could see behind everyone else, I'm like, he's basically glowing and looking at me like, what are you thinking? Why are you gonna stop? So I sit down in the audience and I look over to my friend and say, oh my God, that is my producer that worked on, and he also forced me to play my piano parts because he came up with like more complicated ones than what I did. And I was really scared to death and crying while he was teaching me them. So I'm like, oh my God, he's on stage right now. And I say his name, and the person behind me goes, Oh, hello. I actually work for the New York Times, and I'm here because I'm, Daniel's friend, and I would love to hear the music you're working on. And gives me his card, and I just sit down and go, "All right, universe, can you really stop punching me in the face right now? Like, you're gonna keep going, right? You're gonna." And I'm just like, "Okay, I guess I'm gonna keep going." And I mean, that was one of those moments, and I've had more. And like I said, June added a lot to that for me, because it must have been devastating to go through that, go all over the world, have all these people following you, and then it kind of just stops. So I can understand that, and I needed to know that happened in order for me to be strong too. So that's one of those moments you just made me think of it. But yeah, Boston Calling. I don't remember what year, but I know St. Vincent was playing, and that other girl that I like that sings that song, ugh, Marina and the Diamonds. It was like a really interesting, eclectic Boston Calling. I don't know, maybe one of the first, I don't know, but it was good. And I came home and wrote music because.
No, that's what you have to do at that point in time, because it's so super necessary. But
It
it's
is super
so
necessary on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven, myself Preston and Mr. EZ Blues. Go ahead, EZ.
No, it's so super, super interesting because, sometimes the universe will tap you on the shoulder. Sometimes it'll whisper in your ear. Sometimes it'll grab you by the collar and shake the ever-living bejesus out of you just to get its point across. And there's been so many times where the industry has literally kicked me while I was up. I don't say it kicked me when I was down. They kicked me when I was up. And it has been some of the most life-affirming aspects that I've ever seen. And I think it came out until I think maybe this year or last year, where I finally just like admitted to myself, like, okay, you're creative. That's who you are. That's what you do. You can try to pretend to be other things. You fail at it. You're never going to be a good store clerk. You're just not going to be. There's going to be somebody that's going to say something to you, and you're going to turn into Randall from Clerks and, possibly get fired. But you're always going to go back to making music. You're always, that's when you're happiest. That's when you're on stage, you own the world. And then when you get off stage, you turn into a 12-year-old that's still sitting on his bed singing into his mirror. But that's about me, but it's not about me. This is about you, Jen. All right.
Pictured you doing that.
somewhere online, it used to be in my MySpace.
Oh.
This is how far back this goes. I apparently had a Shanana guitar that I was windmilling, and I had a microphone with a big orange pop filter on it. When I was and I was like in like almost in I want to say polyester, like a polyester shirt at like 6 or 7 years old. But that's how long. If people could find my old MySpace and find that picture, I would love it because I haven't seen it in years. But really, the most important aspect is this: is you knew who you were, and you're continuing to grow and be who you are. Is there any type of advice you do have? Because you have been someone who has been reaching out and reaching back as many steps as you go forward. Is there any advice that you have for that person sitting on their couch right now, thinking that, yeah, I don't know, these guys sound like they're normal people, but they're not normal like me. There's no way I can make music like they can. Can you speak to that person for us, please?
Well, I mean, first of all, music is all about what you're into, right? So music is different for everybody. And I like all different kinds of music. So just because you don't think that you're a person that can get up there and be a diva and belt out like the national anthem, that doesn't mean that you're not a part of music. Like, I mean, I love a guttural scream. I love like. I mean, I love heavy metal. I love everything. So, I mean, if there's something you want to do, there's going to be somebody that wants to listen to what you're doing because there's
Course.
somebody out there that's just as weird as you are. And I've been lucky to start to meet some people who are either just as weird as I am or just as strong or just as, I guess, unapologetically themselves, because I really can't be anyone but myself. And I like people like that. I tend to be drawn more to the people that tell, you know, the good and the bad, not just the good. So if you, I feel like this industry forces some people to feel like they always have to be happy and in this good space in order to be a part of it. And I think that you just have to be real.
Right.
So if you could be real and you could do your art and whatever it fulfills for you, it does. But don't let anybody else tell you what your art is or what it's worth, because I mean, even with the funny things that I've put out there, like my song Gemma Star, I had someone write to me and tell me that it sounded very Bonnie Raitt and they loved it, which I told you, nobody knew we were going to do a Bonnie Raitt song together. And for someone to tell me that my own song I wrote
right.
with June sounded like a Bonnie Raitt song, I was like, oh my God.
You're like, mission accomplished.
Yes, I was like, that worked. But then, you know, I do speak out about other things, and there are certain mm-hmm. people you mm-hmm. can't speak out about. And I do believe there's something going on with the mainstream music where people are involved in sort of a cult, and I will say mm-hmm. that. And so I made the mistake of saying on my page, you know, that I don't think this particular person is the end all be all of music. And then suddenly a whole bunch of their minions were all over my pages telling me my music sucked.
Wow.
But to me, if my music sucks and you want to go as far as to come on my page so that you can tell me that in defense of someone with the initials TS, then give me all of the attention you want.
Because word.
It's not going to do anything bad for me.
Yeah. See, that's it makes absolutely no sense to me at all. Like, you know, I've gone back and forth with people online and literally I start to thank them. I'm like, thank you. They're like, why are you thanking me? I'm ripping you apart. I'm like, yeah, but you're expanding me in the algorithm. Exactly. So now more people are going to follow this. More people are going to look at this. And I really, you're my biggest fan today, so thank you. They get really mad when you say that. They get really, really mad when they say that. But no, it's so super true, you know. Or you have all those people, you know, many months ago, maybe a year ago, you had all the people that were very, very mad at Bud Light because of, you know, something that they had done. So they bought a bunch of Bud Light, which paid the company, and then destroyed what they just bought, and they didn't even drink it. Mm-hmm. Not that you should be drinking Bud Light anyway, not because it's like a beer and alcohol is bad, just because it's not a good beer. but right now, the producers are trying to pull the Apollo curtain on us right now. We only have a couple more minutes left. We want to give this time to you. You can promote yourself, tell people where they can get in touch with you, how they can support your art, and where they can find all your awesome tracks. Jen, you know we love you, so please tell everyone how they can fall in love with you as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we've got Spotify there, so you can find Jennifer Hill on Spotify. I've been secretly releasing songs that I didn't release before. because this album's coming out and I have to hold on to songs from the album. Mm-hmm. And I had a bunch of songs that had like swears in them that were not good to put on the album.
Right, right.
And they're kind of interesting. So if you want to hear some of my B-sides, like a song called Effed Up Psycho, nice. And Have You Ever, I've been putting those out in between. So those are kind of some fillers for now, because you can listen to the first single, Gemma Star. So those are out on all streaming services. So just find Jennifer Hill, mm-hmm. and you'll find me on there. I will be booking a tour for this album as soon as we are done with the last bits of things, because there are still a couple things that I would like to tweak because I'm a perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
So please check out my Jennifer Hill TikTok. I'm Jen Hill on Instagram. Somehow I stole my own name and couldn't get it back. So I'm Jen Hill Music on Instagram. And the same thing on Facebook, Jen Hill Music. And if you want to go to jenhillmusic.com, you can find out more about my bio, things I've done, and then I'll be posting the album and more things about that. You also can buy my perfume line on there, which is dedicated to people that have PTSD or any sort of like anxiety struggle, because it's all formulated with oils that are made to relax, and it's non-gender, like everybody smells good in it. Mm-hmm. So those are on my site. That's, and it's J Hill perfume, but if you just go to jenhillmusic.com, I've got a little page dedicated to that, and you can buy them right from there. I also have merch now available that you can find as well through the same thing. My album cover, I think, is amazing, and it was done by one of my friends out in southwestern Colorado. I love it so much, I may be getting it tattooed on myself. I mean,
I see content for your TikTok. You and the tattoos thing. I'm just putting it out there. It'll work really well. It'll be really good marketing for the record. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, I know we have like only a second left, but I asked this person to try to put into an anatomical heart, almost like it was going to explode, like from all the stuff it went through in life. It has a bullet hole through it, has every single thing I've been through. And she also made it pretty. I don't know how it's pretty. I have no
because
idea.
Because pain can be pretty sometimes.
Yes. And she's a beautiful person, so she definitely figured out how to take my pain and not make it so ugly. So that's another thing. So I have pocket mirrors, because I like to do different things. Mm-hmm. I have pocket mirrors available, and pins and all that good stuff with that anatomical heart design.
Nice. Jen, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. Thank you much.
Absolutely. Myself, Preston, and my partner in crime, Long Island Rays, Elm City Made, EZ Blues on 103.5 FM, New Haven.
just listen up, I'm in your ear, and I'm gonna tell you my secrets. I've been a bad girl since I was born. I know you wouldn't know it with these innocent eyes and this cherub smile. You would think I'm a little one who's never done anything. Make you blush. But me, I'm different, as different can be. If you wanna be my friend, you can't pretend that you understand.